Five Talks series. This is talk number four on the five principles. And so just take a few moments to do a quick review, and then we'll get into the principle number four today, aligning with God. All right, so this is a quiz. Since Amber started with the poll, we'll continue with the quiz. So what is unity? When we talk about unity's foundation principles, we're talking about what we espouse. We're not telling you what to believe. We don't do that in unity. We're saying this is what we espouse because it holds our attention and awareness on the aim of the spiritual journey. So the first foundation principle, what we espouse in unity is?
There is only one presence and one power active in my life and in the universe, God the good.
That's right. Okay, excellent. There's just God going on, right? So that's the greater reality that we want to affirm. That's what we hold as the context for how we want to embrace our life experience, as if there's just God going on. But what happens when there's an exception to that? Well, there's principle number two. And what is principle number two?
See principle number one.
Okay, well, if there's just God going on, what does that say about us? Right, we are divine. And so if we're divine, then we need to recognize that our essence is that we are the one. And so for us to kind of really own the truth of us, we have to feel a great sense of worthiness, a great sense of knowing that we're here to make a difference, that God has created us to be unto our own life, the one unto our world, the Christ of God unto our world. And when we recognize that that's the truth of our essence, then the challenge becomes is to reconcile everything that lives unlike that. Do you have some aspect of yourself that is living in some experience other than absolute worthiness? Do you have some sense of not enough or some sense that you don't measure up or whatever? So these are the dynamics that we have to reconcile because they're not the truth of us. So foundation principle number three states, therefore, that if we are having a life experience that doesn't look and feel as if there's just God going on or that we're the one, then principle number three tells us what? That's right. We create our own personal reality. How do we do that?
With our thoughts.
What else?
Beliefs.
Right, our behaviors and how we feel within ourselves. So there's a dynamic of generating a way of being with what's going on that produces our life experience or creates our personal reality. And if we don't understand that that's a dynamic that we help to co-create, then we believe as if life happens to us instead of understanding that we're co-creators with God creating our life experience. And so now principle number four is all about principle number three, therefore, is the law of mind action. We create our own personal reality. I wanted to get that part out. Now, principle number four, what we're going to be talking about today, is that we can transform our life experience through spiritual practice. So principle four basically states that through prayer and meditation, we can transform our lives. And while it's important for us to recognize that if our life isn't working out the way in which we believe it's supposed to, then we have tools. We can do something to transform our life and therefore our world. And it's important for us to recognize that that's our job. Rather than to believe that our life has to look and feel a certain way in order for us to be okay or feel safe or feel successful or feel validated, we need to recognize that we actually can create those inner states ourselves independent of what's happening in the outer world. And when we recognize that that's what we're capable of, then all the power is ours. There doesn't exist any power over us save that which we give. And as we recognize this, then the focus becomes what spiritual practices accelerate our experience of this reality called there's just God going on. And so our spiritual practice doesn't work with changing the outer, but changing what? Changing our own inner state, our own process of how our mind generates our personal reality. We change the mechanism by virtue of how we are thinking and feeling and believing and being with what we're having. And so as we think about spiritual practice, and this is all I'm wanting to get to this point and make this point because it takes us through the rest of the talk. And that is that we need to reconcile this reality that 95% of our behaviors arise from this dimension of ourself that is unconscious. And if that's the case, then much of what is our life experience happens as a reflection of that years of conditioning that have become our unconscious self that generates a significant portion of our personal reality. And so part of the journey of waking up, part of the journey of transforming our lives is to recognize what we have to do in order to override this phenomenon. And so it could be said that this dimension of us that is unconscious is what could be described, AKA, the autopilot. Are you familiar with the autopilot? Have you ever done something automatically and didn't even have any sense of the outer experience, but come to realize that you've done all of these things and didn't even give it a second thought? I have this experience all the time when I'm driving. Have you ever been driving and not even paying attention to where you're going and had all these thoughts come through you, through your head? And I mean, imagine being operating under this autopilot.
His wife catching that man taking an apparent cat nap, arms crossed, as he drives down I-5 at 70 miles an hour.
You know, it's scary to think that, okay, so the guy 18 inches on my passenger side is sound asleep.
Does make an interesting point. If the autopilot was on here, the technology works. That car maintained its speed and never swerved or drifted, but it is still a dangerous incident, and also it is illegal to fall asleep at the wheel.
Absolutely.
On your wreck if you do.
Yeah, maybe so. So the autopilot is a phenomenon of a part of our mind-body process. In other words, our brain works towards maximum efficiency, and it can do things much better if we stay asleep. In other words, it becomes problematic when we wake up, when we actually want to decide to do things much different than our programming or our conditioning. And so there's a part of our mind-body process that keeps us in the habitual way in which we have created our life experience. And to the degree that we want to change or transform our life, we have to change this subconscious program if we are to have a different outer life experience, because 95% of our decisions or behaviors arise from this unconscious dimension of ourself that we can call the autopilot. Now, autopilots are really a great invention, and it's neat that they're autopilots for airplanes, for instance, because pilot an airplane is a complex process, and to the degree that you can eliminate some of the routine tasks is the degree that you can pay attention to navigation and things of this nature. But when we're on automatic pilot, when we're living in the dynamic of living in the context of how our life is unto us, and therefore living in the experience of stress and living by the hormones of stress, then that creates a challenge for us to transform. It could be said that it's very difficult to transform our life or to override the automatic pilot if we are not capable of really understanding the mechanism that we have to address, and that is settling our nervous system. So part of understanding the dynamics that have to take place that recondition our mind to a different way of being with our life experience has to do with understanding the different dynamics of how our brain and how our neurology and how psychology work. And so the psychologist Daniel Kahneman has developed a way of understanding how the brain has a hierarchical approach to how it manages its dynamic of making us healthy and safe. So system one is called the autopilot. And it's a part of our brain that's reflexive, reactive. It happens very quick. And it works to control and make sure it manages outer circumstances. But here's the thing. In autopilot, there is no self-awareness. So when you are on autopilot, you cannot see how you're being with what you're having. You're just relating from this place of conditioned self. A program is running us when we're in automatic pilot. And so we have to override this circuitry if we're to have a different life experience. So if we understand the neurological dynamic of what we have to do in order to settle the autopilot, shut down that automatic way of being with what we're having, and give ourselves an opportunity to choose how we're going to be with the moment, we have to settle our nervous system. Because when we live out of the stresses, out of the hormones of stress, then we're being run by cortisol and adrenaline, and our sympathetic nervous system is what is fired, is what is turned on. And what we know now in brain science about our nervous system is that when our sympathetic nervous system, which is the nervous system of reaction, of danger, of dealing with an outer threat, what happens is that nervous system shuts down saliva, digestion, and our immune function. And if we're living predominantly in the context of our autopilot, can we not now understand the negative health effects of living constantly under the belief that something out there is a threat unto us? And so it's not until we shift out of the autopilot into the pilot, let's say, in other words, us now taking charge of how we're going to be with what we're having, do we turn on the parasympathetic nervous system. Think of a parachute slowing things down. And when we shift out of the autopilot into the pilot, that means now we're having to decide how we're going to be with the moment instead of our reactive patterns determining how we're going to respond and react. And so notice in this dynamic, when the pilot is activated, now we turn on the various elements that have to do with our vital health and well-being functions, such as the production of saliva, digestion turns on, immune function reestablishes itself. It is said that you need 8 hours of sleep to reboot the parasympathetic nervous system. So how many of us adequately shift back into a sense of autonomy, knowing that we are the avenue through which God expresses, as opposed to life is just happening to us? And therefore, autopilot serves us because we have defense mechanisms and coping strategies that help us push away what looks, and feels bad, and hold on to what looks and feels good. And so these unconscious behaviors that moves us into pushing away and separating or holding on to what we want are things that we have to overcome, because they're driven aspects of our conditioned self, as opposed to how we would choose to be if we had a mind to. How would you choose to be with what you're having if you had a mind to? And think about all the things that we become without making the choice. It's just is chosen for us by virtue of our reactive pattern. And so when we're in this dynamic of wanting to restabilize our nervous system, we have to actually do a technique that reactivates the parasympathetic nervous system, and especially the vagus nerve, which is a part of that network that helps our brain then look at our experience in the context of a greater dimension of life. In other words, when our whole brain is capable of being present to our life experience, and when we're coming from it out of the context of our oneness with God, knowing our own worth, then we turn on all of the healthy neurological functions that create a great sense of coherence and entrainment within our mind-body process. And then now we have access to capacities that are not tethered to our reactive self. So let's understand what we mean by the autopilot more specifically. There are two aspects of that system one autopilot that lives within our mind-body process. One aspect of that is our reactive nature. In other words, when we're in a triggering moment, all of a sudden we become a part of a cascade that we have no control over. In a triggering moment, there's a perceived threat. The amygdala sounds the alarm, and that wakes up the brainstem. The thalamus sends up a wake-up signal to the brainstem, and then the brainstem sends neoepinephrine throughout the brain, and then the sympathetic nervous system signals the organs and muscles to fight or flee. The hypothalamus prompts the pituitary, and then the pituitary prompts the adrenals to release stress hormones, and then within 2 seconds, our emotional body is hijacked. We have no control over that because that lives in our automatic pilot. The only recourse that we have is to shift out of the autopilot into knowing what's happening. Oh, what's happening is I'm being triggered. It's touching a part of me that's living in the disconnect. That's why I have to push away or I have to be safe. But when I recognize that that's what's going on, I can be with the experience because I know it's not against me. My reaction is a conditioned response. I don't have to live out of that conditioned way of being. And so what we know about brain science is that we can actually interrupt this cascade if in the moment of perceiving a triggering that we shift into heart-centered coherence. And interestingly enough, the very practice that Jane has led us to facilitate us actually reboots the vagus nerve and the parasympathetic nervous system if we do that routinely and with intention. So in other words, it's okay that you don't get 8 hours of sleep, but you have to at least spend 20 minutes a day in this process of reactivating your vagus nerve, rebooting your parasympathetic nervous system, because it's the only way you get out of the autopilot. And as we understand the science, the brain science, and what's at stake with respect to how we have to actually work the principles in order to transform our life, now we can understand why prayer and meditation and spiritual practice is so integral to our journey, is because it takes us out of the autopilot. And it helps us to understand what we're actually dealing with. So this is the primary aspect of system one in our autopilot, is the reactive aspect. The second aspect of the autopilot is running things habitually. In other words, the autopilot is just our habits running us. And when we're living out of our unconscious circuitry, then whatever is in our circuits defines us. So if we have a sense of not enough, if we have a sense of that we don't matter, then those beliefs are going to play out in our life because the unconscious program is churning out that energy. And so we have to override that. We have to do something that takes us out of the autopilot if we're to really then use our spiritual practice to really make a difference. So here's where I'm going with this. And that is that as we think about our purpose transforming our life, and as our lives are transformed, we're called to make a greater difference in our world. We cannot be about that work if we're in the unconscious autopilot. There's no self-awareness in that dimension of ourself. And until we wake up, until we remind ourselves that, oh, I'm in the autopilot now, and I know I'm in the autopilot is when I feel like life's against me, or I'm triggered, or I'm pushing something away, or I'm having to have things be a certain way, or when I need to be right, or when I have somebody the matter with me. These are all the ways in which we're living in the autopilot and just living a program. And so our process of waking up is about reconditioning the autopilot. In other words, the pilot sets the autopilot, determines the direction and the waypoints and the process by which that journey is made. And so we still have the circuits that we have to honor and value. The reactive part of us keeps us safe, and our habits of being keeps us in some kind of flow. But as we illumine our habits of being, as we give those reactive parts of ourselves some context, some wisdom, some understanding, then we don't have to suffer the unintended consequence of our unconscious self. So loving kindness is a powerful meditation, and this is a little slightly different than the heart lock-in. We start with the heart lock-in to kind of open up this energy center, but then loving kindness helps us transcend our own self, our own individual self, and so that we connect up with a dimension of being that is all-inclusive. And that that just so happens shuts off the autopilot, and then we open our awareness in this dimension of ourself where we recognize that we have worth, we have value, we can make a difference, we have power. But that's something that we have to activate, and if we aren't in the routine of activating that, then we are living by those programs instead. So as we look at spiritual practice and its capacity to transform our lives, then all transformation ultimately results in greater alignment with the reality of God. Would you not say that that's true? That any transformation ultimately we arise or align with this awareness that is just God going on. And to the degree that we have exceptions to that principle means that some aspect of our conditioning is living in the autopilot. And we have to do the work to expunge that. And the only way that we can expunge that is retraining those circuits, reconditioning those circuits to the pilot's intentionality. And as a pilot, your job is to create a future that serves the greater good and to move in that direction. So Amber has mentioned the Q process training, and this is something that is integral to our capacity to override the autopilot in our life, to really learn how our own self system runs us when we're not the pilot. And it gives us a handle, a mechanism, a process by which we can really overcome our self-imposed limiting beliefs. So I'm going to end by pointing us to next week, when we're talking about principle number 5, which is all about being the change. And that it's insufficient to simply know these principles. It's insufficient just to have all of these great ideas. We have to actually do something in the outer in order for the programming to be overridden. And so part of being able to do something that actually moves us towards what we're trying to create for ourselves means that we have to generate a relationship with the dimension of ourself that is our higher self, our intuitive nature. And that way of developing that is always through our heart. So I'm going to share a video in just a moment. And it comes from a class that Jay and I teach through Unity Worldwide Spiritual Institute, The Eye of the Storm. And we have our students go through an experience that's similar to the Q process. They are invited to go through a 21-day process where they go into their heart and they ask their heart to reveal a moment when they were showed up, failed to be with whatever is happening out of a sense of presence, purpose. And if given the opportunity, what authentic action would I be invited to do, to take by virtue of consulting my heart, and to take that action and then to bear witness as to what took place, what unfolded because of it. And so commonly our students have great resistance to actually doing this practice, but as they're able to overcome that resistance and able to actually implement an imperative that arises from their heart, it's fascinating what can emerge. And so this is a short video, and I think that it'll be self-explanatory as to why this is really important.
The story that I had, and
that's his cat.
And I actually had a bunch of these, and this is actually, you know, I didn't say this in the opening statement, but one of the things about staying in the storm is just all the cool little things that happen when you start healing, and it's, oh my gosh. Anyway, so we were at a Rockies game, and we were in the middle of the row, and on one side there was a partition, so you could only get out of the row on one side. And so we had gotten up a few times to do various things, to walk around, get some food, drink, whatever. And the guy at the end of the row, kind of an older gentleman, maybe in his 60s, finally, like maybe on the third time we got out, said, "Next time you'll have to crawl over me if you want to pass again." I couldn't tell if he was serious or joking or what, but I just kind of kept my cool and just, you know, walked up the stairs. And so I started, you know, thinking about And of course, the ego is more than happy to offer a lot of unpeaceful thoughts. So I just stopped, and you know, we had gone up to get some ice cream. It was pretty hot that day. And so while I was in line, I said, you know, what's going on here? You know, what's the storm? What did I bring here? And the thought that I had come, that came in was about control and connection issues. And so I kind of went through that a little bit, and I said, well, what do I recommend? Because I got to walk by this guy again. So what do you recommend? You know, because by this time I, you know, was really heart-centered, really quiet and calm. And so the thought that came in was buy him a bottle of water. And I thought, oh, well, yeah, I don't, shit, man, I'm deprived them, you know, I paid for the seat, and of course, there goes the ego again. And so I just said, okay, all right, I'm going to buy him a bottle of water. And then about that time, too, I got a download kind of this guy. It was kind of the weirdest thing. I kind of got a little backstory on this guy, and I couldn't tell if I was making it up or if it was actually coming in, but just about, you know, his loneliness issues and connection issues and some other stuff. And I knew I had connection issues too. So, you know, this gift was just kind of about love. It wasn't a pride. And so I ended up getting the bottle of water. So we came back to the seats, and, you know, I walked up to him, you know, and he kind of looks up kind of weary and grumpy. And so I handed him the bottle of water, and I said, you know, here's a peace offering, brother. And man, the whole like scene just like changed. I mean, this guy, like I said, he looked kind of a little older and kind of a little weary, but man, he jumped up like a little teenager, and he was all smiling and he was all happy, and he started talking like a million miles a minute. And I couldn't really tell a lot of what he was saying, but just in that moment, there was just such love. There was just such connection. It could have easily have gone the other way. And so I felt it, he felt it, you know, and then we ended up walking back to our seats, but it just felt so good, you know. And again, just kind of looking at the control issues, you know, I'm always trying to control with my mind and use the intellect. And instead, I really just kind of tapped into the heart that day, and it really showed me kind of a different way of living, a different way of experiencing and just being in that connection. It was just beautiful.
Yeah. That's a great story. So the idea is that we'll always be amazed at what our heart inspires us to live into. And these are stories that Jane and I hear time and time again. And just by people just practicing this very simple technique of becoming heart-centered. I just want to conclude by adding a little bit more information to the specific technique to reboot your vagus nerve and restart your parasympathetic nervous system. And so these instructions are aligned with the latest brain research. So the first thing to do is to sit in a comfortable position, make sure your spine is straight and your neck is not twisted, but your neck is straight, as if you're pulling up on the top of your head and pulling down in your spinal cord, so you're straight. There you go. And then you establish a 6-3-6-3 breathing rhythm. So you breathe in for six counts, hold for three, exhale for six, and pause for three before taking that again. And doing that for three cycles, and then allowing your breath just to normalize. And then to make sure you expand your lower abdomen, because as you exhale and as you push down, that exhalation is what triggers the parasympathetic nervous system. And when you're opening your rib cage and contracting it, that massages the vagus nerve. And so those activities are also part of it. And so begin with yourself and continuing with family members, friends, acquaintances, adversaries, and all sentient beings. Just as Jane led us in, say, may I be happy, may I be free of suffering, may I find peace and comfort, may I be healthy and prosperous. And then you continue with your family, acquaintances, adversaries, such and such. And so if you practice this, and it only take you a few minutes to practice this, maybe 10 minutes, and then reflect upon how you feel afterwards and get a little sense of reward from recognizing that you have just stepped out of your autopilot and fully activated your capacity to be present to the actual moment that you're having. And then as you find yourself during the day, either dipping more into stress or into any kind of reactive pattern, repeat this exercise. And you can recondition and train your brain to be able to very quickly move out of being overwhelmed with the energy of those hormones and settle your nervous system very fast. So thank you so much for your attention. Next Sunday, be the change. God bless you all.
I especially appreciated that video. I wished I would have had an unconscious drive into church today. I had a very eventful one with a driver that really had me practicing a lot of patience, so it was good. Anyway, unity stands for peace in the presence of conflict, for love in the presence of hatred, for forgiveness in the presence of injury. Unity honors the many names for God, the many paths to God. For we know that there is only one power, one presence, one life. So whoever you are and wherever you are on your journey of transformation, you are welcome here. We would especially like to welcome anyone who is here for the first time. If this is your first time visiting with us and you feel comfortable raising your hand, our ushers have a gift packet for you. Anyone? Nobody wants the free latte, huh? Okay. So we would also like to welcome our online viewers. Hello, online viewers. Thank you for joining us this morning. Now it is time to welcome and greet each other with a handshake, a high five, or whatever suits you. We begin with our welcome song.
The Academy song.
Thank you.
What note was that?
Good morning, everybody. My name is Jim Sledge. I have the privilege of being the treasurer on your board of trustees, and this is a time of our community giving. And as we heard through the Amber Alert this morning, this is a very special place, and we're doing some very unique things that requires each of us to maybe step out a little bit more than we have done in the past.